group of a dozen or so that completed the tour of the Capitol, and boy, I just really highly recommend it. I think if we're going to report back to the people we represent on this project, I just think you have to see it and you have to become involved in it. So I strongly encourage that. Members, we are on the last reading now, on third reading and final passage. So the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 165. And reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 165, introduced by Representative Barlow. Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine Practice Act, an act relating to professions and occupations. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 165, and I will withdraw it at the appropriate time. The other day when this bill came up on Committee of the Whole, I took a pretty good beating on that from my colleagues who said that they knew people that had benefited from acupuncture. So I felt that it was necessary to look up the scientific basis for acupuncture. And I reviewed the Cochrane reviews, which are the number one database for evidence-based medicine here in the country. It's available to physicians and citizens of the state of Wyoming. So I did look at those items in their reviews of various conditions that acupuncture has been used for. And I'll just read you a number of them. I think it's illustrative of my opinion that acupuncture really doesn't have any business having a board in our state. The first item is on shoulder pain, and this is what the Cochrane Review said about that. There is little evidence to support or refute the use of acupuncture for shoulder pain. Then on dyspareunia, which is painful periods, there is insufficient evidence to demonstrate whether or not acupuncture or acupressure are effective in treating primary dyspareunia. Then in regard to fibromyalgia, there is moderate level evidence that the effect of acupuncture does not differ from sham acupuncture in reducing pain, fatigue, or improving sleep or global well-being. Then, in regard to depression, we found insufficient evidence to recommend the use of acupuncture for people with depression. Then, in regard to epilepsy, available controlled trials are small, heterogeneous, and have high risk of bias. The current evidence does not support acupuncture for treating epilepsy. Then, for global neurological deficiency, from the available evidence, acupuncture may have beneficial effects on improving dependency, global neurological deficiency, and some specific neurological impairments for people with stroke in the convalescent stage, with no obvious serious adverse events. However, most included trials were of inadequate size and quality. There is therefore inadequate evidence to draw any conclusions about its use, its routine use. Rigorously designed, randomized, multi-center, large, simple, or sample trials of acupuncture for stroke are needed to further assess its effects. Then, in regard to schizophrenia, there is not enough information to establish that acupuncture is a benefit or harm to people with mental health problems. Then in regard to vascular dementia, which is the main cause of senile dementia, that's what you probably hear of it as. The effectiveness of acupuncture for vascular dementia is uncertain. More evidence is required to show that vascular dementia can be treated effectively by acupuncture. Then, in regard to cancer pain, there is insufficient evidence to judge whether acupuncture is effective in treating cancer pain in adults.
Representative Hallinan, you have 30 seconds for this first
time. There's any number of other items in this list, and they're all the same. They say that acupuncture has not been demonstrated to be beneficial except in very minimal cases. And the amount of effect that acupuncture has had has been almost negligible. So thank you for the time, Mr. Speaker.
Representative, that was impeccable timing at 4 minutes, 58.97 seconds. Best I've ever seen. That was really perfect timing. Any other members for their first time? Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House, I can't argue with the esteemed representative that just spoke, but I heard this in my committee, and I heard that physical therapists who do a lot of good use a technique called dry needling. Well, I understand that's also piercing the skin, so it sounds to me like it's real similar, if not the same, as acupuncture. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In support of the amendment and against the bill, this bill does permit any board that gets established by this bill to submit a budget request at any time in the future. I understand from the numbers there were just a few acupuncturists who requested this, but many more that didn't. And, you know, one of the things I run on in my elections is it's self-reliance. And what I say is that I will not vote for a bill that presumes the inability of the average American to manage his or her own affairs. This bill is just an example of the state trying to tell its residents that it knows best the practitioners whom they may or may not patronize. I urge I vote on the amendment and no on the bill.
Any other member for their first time? Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking against the amendment and on in favor of the bill, a couple of points. We can all use the internet to get information. When I have looked, an institute that is located near our nation's capital, which has also looked into acupuncture, has actually found that there are many potential benefits without any serious negative side effects. I mention this mostly because I think it's appropriate that we let the citizens of Wyoming determine for themselves what kind of medical care they want. And in this case, I think by approving this bill, we are creating this opportunity for those people who think acupuncture is the best option for them in treating what's most usually body pains or migraines. I think it would be inappropriate for us to deny them that opportunity. Thank you.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm against the amendment and for the bill. If it would please the body, I just want to remind you that the acupuncturists came to us for they want to become licensed and at least have some sort of a practice act that they can go against. There are a lot of people that probably don't agree with what a chiropractor does, but this would at least get them out of the dark ages and into some sort of compliance and some sort of regulation. So I would just urge you to vote against the amendment that the good doctor brought forward, and then vote for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Furphy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm against this amendment and in favor of the bill. I just remind you, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people in this state that are using acupuncture. We had testimony to that effect, so it's out there. And as a reminder, we're only one of four remaining states that do not license this practice. I think it's in our best interest to take care of our citizens to offer a licensing board that understands this practice, knows what it takes to do this correct. So I think it is a safety issue for our citizens if we don't establish this board. So once again, I ask you to vote against the amendment and vote in favor of the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My guideline for these kind of deals is always whether it was motivated and brought into the committee from a consumer or from a vendor. And when it's from a vendor, I usually think it's probably for some kind of a cornering of the market or protectionism or something like that. On the other hand, if you got a set of consumers that come in and says, please license these guys because we're getting a raw deal from a certain subset of them, then that makes a difference to me. But I don't recall whether the committee had any input from consumers or not. I'd be interested in hearing that.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First for a second, please.
Hey, thank you. Any other member for their first time? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thanks. Just to answer some questions, Mr. Speaker. Previously, this bill came forward 2 or 3 years ago, and at that time it was asked for by consumers. We had two instances in this state, one here in my county. He's currently still serving in a cell. For holding himself out to be an acupuncturist and committing some nefarious acts. And so at that point, I remember 2 or 3 years back was really when this conversation started rolling because people were holding themselves out to be acupuncturists without any licensing, without any certifications, just hanging a shingle on the door, and things happened. I would say that the most compelling testimony to me when in dealing with this issue, that we are one of four states, but really the issue is we have these people, acupuncturists now practicing in Wyoming who hold certifications and master's level degrees, whether or not you agree that it's a legitimate degree. They spent a lot of money and a lot of time pursuing this, and they're operating in Wyoming, and they're operating technically currently, when I read the statute and other people with law degrees that I don't have read the statute, not in compliance with our Medical Practice Act. I mean, they're basically operating illegally right now. And so it's my fear if we don't allow them this certification process and a licensing board, that eventually the board that oversees medicine in our state will, in fact, bring an action against however many of these there are in the state, and we'll be putting people out of business and holding them out to be criminals. And I don't think that's our intent either. And so we are kind of in a difficult situation on which way to go here, but I would submit to you that, I guess, 40, six other states have seen fit to do something like what we're proposing, for better or worse. The federal government, through their the agency that oversees our military members and their health care, has seen fit to offer this service and reimbursement for these services for good reasons, I would say. And so I think we're past the point of whether or not this is effective or not, because the nationwide discussion has gone past that point. We're really at the place now where there's only four states left. Will we be attracting nefarious actors, or will we be currently holding out the people doing this profession in our state out to be criminals? And we're getting pretty close to that point. And so this bill is a really good step to solve that situation, hopefully in the positive, for the people who want to be practitioners and have a small business and a practice in the state and encourage entrepreneurship. I think that should be the goal. And they came to us with this bill. There's an association, and they think it's time, and they're, I think, very cognizant of the fees that are associated, and they know, we've warned them sometimes, you know, you think you know what you're getting, and then you find out, but I think they're pretty familiar with what it's going to cost them to do this certification and licensure each year, and they're ready to take it on, and I'm ready to give it to them.
Any other members for their first time? For your first time, for your second time before the sponsor, any members for their second time? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nothing in this bill, if it doesn't get passed, or if it does get passed, prevents anyone from seeking acupuncture. When this bill was introduced, a speaker warned that we must pass it so that people don't get hurt. A license to work from the state prevents harm. I've asked for assurances on this point and haven't gotten them. Wyoming once held the title for the state with the fewest occupations requiring state permission. Let's try to draw a line in the sand here. Aye on the amendment and no on the bill. Thank you.
Any other members for their second time before the sponsor, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With trepidation, I seek to speak after the Madam Vice Chairman. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to point out a couple things, and there's been a good discussion, and I appreciate that. A Practice Act establishes a standard. Establishes a standard that the consumer can rely on, and also establishes a standard that the profession relies on. So that we have a bar. We know what that bar is, and we have a way to judge folks that are practicing below the bar or practicing above the bar. That's important to the citizens of the state. Our good resident doc brought some good points forth about the evidence and the benefits. But I think what you had heard as he made that case was insufficient evidence. There is not enough study. There is not enough of these things to actually do it. And one of the reasons is because we're talking about comparing one type of medicine, a traditional Far East medicine, with what we can, what was many of us consider modern medicine. And sometimes those correlations don't work together. The very conditions that were mentioned, those are modern medical terms. So keep that in mind as you say. But the words were insufficient evidence, lack of evidence, not available, inadequate to have draw conclusions. It wasn't that it was harmful, or it wasn't that it didn't work, so there was not enough information. I want to clarify something about acupuncturist numbers, just the body. I know there's been a little confusion on this, and I apologize for that. There's approximately 30 folks that are the highest level of training recognized by the National Board, approximately 30. There are a couple, and some of you have heard from them, that don't want this act, not because they don't believe there should be an act, because they should be a tougher act that only recognize the highest level of training and only recognize an exceptional standard. I agree in standards, but we also have to start where we are, folks, where we are with the practitioners we have in this state. There's also another group of practitioners who are using this in something that's very important to this state, that's in mental health and substance abuse, in the context of that. And that is something that is being used, not just by folks that practice within this medium, but folks that practice within the counseling medium have licensure in other places with other licensure boards and for health care, mental health care. And then finally, to wrap it up for the medical side of this, there are licensed folks that are licensed under that modern medicine, that Western medicine, that also practice this traditional medicine, if you will, this Far East medicine in the context of their practice, and they do that for pain and other type of things. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think this bill is ready to go forward. It is ready. We are ready to give the citizens of the state a standard. Say, we believe that there needs to be something established for the benefit of our community and the benefit of these folks who are providing this service. So that, Mr. Chairman, I'm against the amendment for the bill, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration on the bill. And I was asked, Mr. Chairman, if there was any relation to the profession that I've chosen and what I practice. And actually, 25 years ago, when I was in school for this, it was not included in the curriculum. But, ladies and gentlemen, it is now in the curriculum at those accredited educational institutions, including the one that I attended, as it is in some of the medical institutions. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I thank you for the time and ask for the favorable consideration of the body on House Bill 165.
Okay. Members, any other member for their second time before the sponsor of the amendment? Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ditto what Chairman Barlow said. I want to, again, speak against the amendment before the bill. And the great medical center in the center part of the state actually has a contract with an acupuncturist for this art, and within the institution. And so I'm not 100% happy with this, because we ended up having to take out some of the language to keep the physicians happy. But I do think it's time to move this forward and to kind of legitimize and move this ancient craft that's worked for thousands of years forward. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any other member, their second time before the sponsor? Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would hate to disagree with my colleague from Campbell County, my distinguished chairman, except that these are controlled trials by experts on whether something works or not, and they couldn't find any evidence that it worked. And therefore, I think that should be dispositive on that question. These are the experts that rule on whether something works or not. And I would add one further issue that I think needs to be brought up, and that is the attempt by these people to get licenses for the purposes of being paid by insurance companies, including Medicaid. At the current time, Medicaid does not recognize acupuncture treatment, and they don't get any payment from them. But they might with licensure, and they are trying to get licensure for that purpose. So our state, which pays for half the Medicaid costs, will be paying for these worthless treatments, as proven by scientific evidence. Therefore, I think that we need to vote down this bill immediately. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hallinan. House Bill 165, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Aye. Baker.
Aye.
Aye. Barlow.
Aye.
Aye. Bightman.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bovee.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Clausen.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
Aye.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
Aye.
Flitner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Guru.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
No.
Lone.
No.
Laux.
No.
McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Obermuller.
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
No.
Pawnell.
Aye.
Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
Aye.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 47 aye, 13 no.
House Bill 165, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members of the House, House Bill 165 has passed the House. Representative Walters.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the Wyoming House of Representatives in 2017, with us today in the gallery is a group of individuals that came down here from Casper. You know that place that's number one in your heart and number one on your license plate? They are part of the Leadership Casper class. If you folks would please stand up.
Welcome to the House. It's a pleasure to have you here today. Members, we are at that order of business of bills on reconsideration. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having voted on the prevailing side of House Bill 159, I move to reconsider the third reading vote on House Bill 159.
Members, this is a procedural motion, does not require a second, and there is no debate. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Bightman.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Bovee.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Clausen.
Aye.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
No.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
No.
Flitner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Guru.
Aye.
Gray.
No.
Greer.
No.
Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
Madden.
Aye. McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Obermuller.
Aye. Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
Aye.
Ponell.
No.
Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 37 aye, 23 no.
Having received a majority of the vote of the elected members, House Bill 159 is reconsidered. And now the original question is, having been read three separate times, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Biteman.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Bovey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Clausen.
Aye.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
No.
Crank.
No.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
No.
Flitner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Garou.
Aye.
Gray.
No.
Greer.
No.
Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
Aye.
Obermuller.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
Aye.
Ponell.
No.
Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 35 aye, 25 no.
House Bill 159, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 159 has passed the House. Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Having voted on the prevailing side of House Bill 151, I am giving notice of my intent to ask for reconsideration of the third reading vote tomorrow at the end of the third reading.
That motion does not require a second, and we will, that is so moved, and it will be at the end of third reading tomorrow. Members, we are at that order of business of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your general file list, there should be a new sheet with a time of 1:40 in your inbox. So that's the sheet we're going to work off of. The first five bills are House Bill 140, House Joint Resolution 8, House Bill 195, and House Bill 235, and House Bill 253, and on down the list. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, say no. Representative Larson.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 140. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 140, introduced by Representative Byrd, Minimum Wage, an Act Relating to Labor and Employment. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 140, Minimum Wage, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Dayton, Giroux, Hallinan, Halverson. Noes, Representatives Clem, Lone, McGuire, and Sweeney. Signed, Representative Dayton, Acting Chair.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move and the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with the recommendation that House Bill 140 do pass. I further move the standing committee amendment. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to actually work the amendment into the bill for you, and that will reduce the paper load significantly. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you would turn to page 2 with your standing committee amendment, if you'll go to the lines 6, I guess is the most, line 4. On line 4, you see a strikeout of 515, and then afterwards it says $9.50. And the amendment would strike out the $9.50, put in $7.25. And essentially, Mr. Chairman, that and after that, the rest of the bill is deleted. So the only operative part of the bill after the standing committee amendment is the $7.25 that is inserted on line 4, and the rest of the bill, the rest of the new language, the rest of all the new language in that on lines 5, 6, 7, 8, and the rest of the bill, minus the effective date, is deleted. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll just give a little bit of a discussion on that. $7.25 is the federal minimum wage standard. Wyoming, as you can see, was currently at $5.15. The committee felt like the proposal before us was out of step with what the committee was willing to do, and so we went to the federal standard and deleted the rest of the bill, which the rest of the bill had to do with tipped employees and a few other things. The current tipped employee salary on line 12 of page 2, that is the federal standard, so we didn't feel any need to touch that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd take any questions on the standing committee amendment, and if there are none, I'll call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment also.
All right. The question has been called on the Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the explanation of the bill, turn it over to the good Representative Byrd from this community. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the House. I bring you today House Bill 140, Minimum Wage. Basically, the chairman explained pretty much what we've worked on here. Originally, we started out with the bill being very broad scope, but I can explain this thing in about less than 1 minute now. We just raised the bottom end of the Wyoming minimum wage to meet the federal standard, and that's really all this bill does because the rest of it's been deleted. And at that point, I would urge an aye vote and stand for questions.
Representative Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the bringer, how does this affect agriculture?
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would affect agriculture if you have employees that you have actually on the rolls as hourly employees or some sort of employee that you're tracking. If you were paying them a salary, this would not apply. If you have some other arrangement that you usually do in agriculture, which varies everything from a quid pro quo to work for trading other agricultural products. It does not affect anything except for if you are paying these individuals in some sort of payroll capacity.
Representative Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on and against this bill. The people that are not as good as their job, I'd say those who are first starting into working, have to have a way to where they can be affordable for an employer to have to go to work for them. If you don't have it low enough to where they can learn their job, that employer will not give them the opportunity. I don't know how many times when I first started working when I was in high school that people paid me way lower than what I thought, but that's what was worth to them, so that's what I went to work for them. And there are a lot of youth out there that could learn to use some good work ethic if they have the opportunity. That's one of the reasons why people that work on ranches are so highly sought after, because they've got a work ethic that they learned on the ranch. I hope that you will oppose this bill with me. Thank you.
Representative Guru.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the committee, we received a lot of testimony, and everyone who got up and testified that they pay their employees over the proposed minimum wage that sits before you today. Not one said that they did not pay that. We kept in the bill a training wage for young people that I think speaks to one of the things that one of the previous speakers talked about a training wage for young people. Still there. This bill is a good bill, and I think it brings us closer to parity, a parity that we need, and a parity that, like I say, in my industry, we're already paying. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last speaker just said that everybody pays more than this. Then I don't see a need to change a bill for the sake of changing a bill. Let's leave the laws the way they are. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any others? Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, there's another reason for getting us up to the federal minimum wage. Whenever you see all 50 states lined up in a rank of what the minimum wage is, you know, they start up in the northwest corner, they're number one, I think, or two. And they work their way down, and you get to number 50. Who do you think that is? You know, if we just, in all practical situations, the minimum wage, as a federal minimum wage, has to be followed unless there is evidence of no interstate commerce, as I understand it. So it really will have no effect, like the last speaker just said. But it does remove us from the stigma of having the lowest one in the country. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two questions that I neglected to ask the sponsor of this amendment when he appeared before our committee, and I'm hoping he can answer them for me now. First question, what is the minimum age for minimum wage? Is there one, is there some age below which you do not have to pay the minimum wage? And my second question is, are there any contracts, any employee groups whose wages are tied to an increase in the minimum wage in this state? I know at the federal level, when the federal minimum wage is raised, all sorts of contracts have provisions that up their employees' wages, either proportionately or by some other mechanism. So my two questions about the age and any jobs or industries that are tied to our state's minimum wage. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll make an attempt at answering those since I'm not a labor wage expert or lawyer. But the first one would have to do with the eligibility of a young individual to work under state and federal statute just to gain employment. We have rules that are covering that particular employment, and at that point they can be either hired at a training wage or a wage that the business seems suitable based on their relationship inside federal statute that would require a minimum of 725 or the existing state statute of 515. As for the second part of that question, I wouldn't exactly know where to go with that because it's tangentially relevant to the bill, but I don't think that the intent here is just to move that bottom rung of employment up to equivalency with what is already required for most of the jobs inside the state of Wyoming. And so that's all we're doing is just bringing that bottom rung up and attempting to get us out of the 50-50 position for the worst minimum wage in the entire country.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll make this quick. I guess I just want to say when we look at minimum wage, think about it this way. What we're going to make in here as a legislator in this week is what a person on minimum wage in this state makes in an entire month as it's written right now. In 5 days, we will all make what a person on minimum wage as it's written right now will make in an entire month. So I don't see any reason why we can't bring this back up to what federal law is. I understand what we're saying. The testimony you heard in committee says that you may not have had anybody do this, but I guarantee there are companies out there that are doing this. Let's take care of Wyoming citizens. This is not anything that you're going to see a massive outflow of people and outflow of businesses because they can't do this. Let's take care of Wyoming citizens.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just say that during my teaching career, I saw a lot of kids that worked, and they were stuck at minimum wage, and if there was a training wage, they were stuck for a long time. I think that we should raise that up to help people develop good work habits. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. You know, one of the things that is a miracle for all the world to see is here in this country where we have the opportunity of free enterprise, and free enterprise has worked so great over the years. This country is starting to fall away into a different form of government. I would challenge you, if you'd like to go higher, why not go up to $100 an hour? Everybody would make a lot of money, and nobody would have a job. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Barlow's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 140 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Ayes have it. Division is being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. More than 24. All right. Pursuant to House Rules 10-5B, House Bill 140, having been failed, a roll call vote is in debt. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm too far. We need a roll call vote. Having failed the standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
No. Baker.
No.
No. Barlow.
Aye.
Aye. Biteman.
No.
No. Blackburn.
No.
No. Blake.
Aye.
Bovee.
Aye.
Aye. Brown.
Aye.
Aye. Burkhart.
It might be an appropriation. Excused.
Excused.
Excused. Bird.
Aye.
Aye. Clausen.
No.
No. Clem.
No.
No. Connolly.
Aye.
Aye. Court.
No.
No. Crank.
Aye.
Aye. Dayton.
Aye.
Aye. Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
No.
Flitner.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Garou.
Aye.
Gray.
No.
No. Greer.
No.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan. Aye. Halverson.
No.
No. Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kenner.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
No. Lindholm.
No.
Lone.
No.
Laux.
No.
McGuire.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Nicholas. No. Northrup.
No.
No. Obermuller. Aye. Olson.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
No.
Ponell.
No.
Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
No.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zawanitzer.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Closing vote, are there any changes? Burkhart, excused?
No.
To no. Other changes? Miller? Aye to no. Other changes? Closing vote? The vote is closed. 20 aye, 40 no.
Pursuant to House Rules 10-5B, House Bill 140, having failed the roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. We are on to the next bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Mr. Majority Floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please move House Bill 195 down below House Bill 174.
Thank you. We are on House Resolution 8. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution 8, introduced by Representative Allen. Federal Responsibility for American Indian Health Care, a joint resolution requesting Congress to uphold the federal trust responsibility to provide for the health care needs of American Indians. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 8, Federal Responsibility for American Indian Health Care, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Dayton, Garou, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire, Sweeney. Signed, Representative Dayton, Acting Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll try another labor health bill here. I move that the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 8 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the resolution over to the fine outfitter from District 33. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. This is a really simple resolution, one that's very needed, and here really what it's about is this. The United States government has sole jurisdiction over Indian Affairs, okay, and the tribal folks. And so they signed a solemn, or they solemnly swore in the treaty to uphold health care for the tribes that Congress did. And they have the sole 100% responsibility to do that. But as it turns out, they are only funding about 41% of the health care needs for the tribal people, even though they made that promise. And so what this does is just requesting Congress to live up to the terms of the treaty and meet their obligations. So I would appreciate your aye vote.
Is there any discussion? Oh, Representative Salazar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to echo what the good representative said. I also agree. I support it. I would encourage the body to support it as well. Thank you so much.
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Barlow's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Resolution 8 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill, or House Resolution 8 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 235. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 235, introduced by Representative Miller, Mentor Small Game and Game Bird Hunting, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 235, Mentor Small Game and Game Bird Hunting, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 235 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. So for the explanation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the fine author and Majority Floor Leader.
Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a simple bill. It goes back to when I was a kid, and those of you that are my age probably grew up the same way, that your first hunting experience was with your dad taking you out in the field. And, you know, I don't know how young I really was when I first shot my first rabbit, but it could have been as young as 6 or 7. And, you know, you learn the joys and you also learn the sorrows of hunting. You know, the sorrow and the feelings you have for that animal that you've taken the life of. You know, and again, like all of you, you probably grew up the same way. If you shoot it, you eat it. And, yeah, that was our motto back then. But the most important part was the hunter safety part. My dad always emphasized the fact that that's a dangerous weapon. Of course, he served in World War II. He knows what weapons can do to people. He says, don't point it at anyone that you don't, or anything you don't want to kill, number one. Number two, the gun is always loaded. Number three, don't cross a fence holding the gun. You hand it to your partner or lay it on the ground, or you just don't do things like that. So that's great. Well, I have three boys. I took them, you know, you can't go rabbit hunting until you pass hunter safety right now. So I took them to hunter safety. The oldest was 13, the next one was 11, and the next one was 9. This was some years ago, but only the two older boys passed. The 9-year-old, who was actually the more responsible of the three boys, couldn't get through the written part of the exams, even though he was the safest of my three boys for hunting. So, you know, I later, when he retook the course when he was 11, I took hunter safety then. I went through that program. It's good. They kind of draw it out. They teach a lot of wildlife recognition and a lot of wildlife management principles. But, you know, frankly, I think I probably did a better job, or my dad did a better job with the hunter safety part with the fact that that's a dangerous weapon, and you got to be really, really careful, and don't point that barrel at anything you don't want to kill, you know? So that's prompted me to bring this bill, because you all have heard that hunter numbers are going down. I think if we're waiting until 13 or 14 to teach hunter safety, a lot of children at that age, whether you be a boy or a girl, have other interests at that time. When you are 7 or 8, you still, you know, your parents are big figures in your life. Going hunting, that was a big deal for me as a kid, and I'm sure it was for many of you too. So that's what prompted me to bring the bill. The hunting numbers are going down. The kids that are starting at 13 and 14, you know, they've kind of lost interest by that time. I think we need to get them earlier, and I think hunting small game is the way to get them started in this. And this bill is going to allow a parent to take their child out hunting, as long as the parent has either passed hunter safety or the parent is born before 1966, which is the age where you're exempt from having to take hunter safety. And that goes to the amendment on the bill, which I'll get to in a second. So the bill on page 2, all it's doing is inserting item E on page 3 to Wyoming Statute 23-2-106, which is hunter safety exemptions. And item 3, or item E on page 3, is a person under 14 years of age who has not yet received a certificate of competency and safety in the use and handling of firearms may take small game and game birds without receiving special authorization from the department. And it goes on. He has to be, while being accompanied by a person who has attained the age of majority, acting as a mentor who possesses or can demonstrate he has obtained a certificate of competency and safety in the use of handling of firearms. And in the amendment, it's inserted that language to where if you were born before 1966, you're age exempted out of this. And then it continues, and who possesses a valid Wyoming small game or game bird license, a mentor shall not provide supervision for more than one person other than immediate family members at a time in the field. And the second part of the amendment inserts a period there and strikes the rest of that line in on line 16 and all of line 17. So the Standing Committee Amendment made those two changes. It inserted the age and struck the language and shall not carry a firearm while providing supervision. So with that, that's an explanation of the amendment. I call for the question on the amendment unless there's any questions.
Question having been called, all those on the Standing Amendment Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye if you're in favor. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. All right, that passed. We're back on the bill. Is there there we got Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question on, this is a good bill, and I don't know how many parents and grandparents might have gone out knowing that their children didn't need the license to hunt small game or fish, but the safety requirement, I guess I never thought of that. In this, it sounds like the mentor has to have a hunting license of some type. I'm on page 2, line 17, and who possesses a valid Wyoming hunting license. I'm curious about that. I'm thinking we might ought to bring an amendment in case the parents or grandparents don't have a rabbit license or something. Thank you. This is a good bill, and I think we need to get it passed.
Okay, Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, that in the way the bill's written now, the mentor, whether it's a parent, grandparent, or frankly, it could even be an older child that could be 18 or 19 who's passed hunter safety. But, again, they still need a small game license, and the bag limit for that license also applies to the mentee. So the mentor does need a game license still. And, yeah, you know, just like they do with the fishing, it's the same way with the fishing license.
Chairman Madden.
So if I'm reading this right, if this passes, then people that are real old, like me, do not have to have this certificate of competency. And if you're real young, you don't have to, but it's the middle-aged ones that have to have it. And I guess I have not been told why it's such a hurdle for a 14-year-old or 13-year-old to get that hunter safety course. I just think that, they don't have to have a license either. I mean, a hunting license, do they?
Majority floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the fine chairman from the east side of the Bighorns. Right now you need to be probably 12, 13, 14 for sure, and you can easily pass the hunter safety exam. But for younger kids, 11 and 10 and 9, that's a difficult test because of the English language skills you need to be able to get through the test. And like I said earlier, for some reason at the age 13 or 14, our children's bodies begin to change, and they have other interests at that time. And I don't think hunting's a priority, particularly then. Whereas when they're 8 and 9 years old, I think that's a quite exciting adventure for them.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had this discussion in committee, and there is an existing mentor program for wildlife. However, if you're going to take big game, so let's say you want to take an antelope, or you want to take a deer, maybe you want to even take an elk, it requires you to be 12 years of age or older. But what we're targeting here is small game with this bill. And by the way, the mentor program with the 12-year-old and other for the mentor program taking big game, that mentor does have to have a hunter safety certificate. All right. So there is an exemption already in law that says if you're born prior to January 1st, 1966, then you are exempt from going and getting a hunter safety certificate. But what we're talking about here and why we felt it was okay here is we're talking about small game. So if you're a grandparent, if you're an older sibling, if you're a parent and you want to take your 8 or 9 year old out, that you can do so long as you either meet the requirements of a hunter safety certificate or are exempt from that section, that you have a valid license, and that you can go out and take your youngster and they can go wild, go hunting for small game. So hope that adds to the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, actually I was going to clarify the same thing on the date of people old enough that don't have to have a card, but another issue out there that my son just ran into recently is there's really a lack of people teaching hunter safety classes. I mean, when my kids were growing up, and I knew several instructors. They held class all the time. I know that my oldest boy right now is trying to get his son into a class. There's no class to get him into. There's no volunteers to teach classes. So it's another part of the issue.
Chairman Eklund.
I guess I'm just trying to clear things up. It was explained to me by that department that would issue the licenses that I might catch fish with that a youth under the age of 14 did not need a license at all. They didn't explain the hunter safety, and I didn't ask any more than that. But I don't believe the CREEL limit goes onto a license. If you're a resident youth, you're on your own. You can get whatever the CREEL limit is on your own. But I don't think that the parent needs, I'd have to find this out, but I don't think the parent, according to what was explained to me, parent or grandparent needed the small game license either. So I'd like to clear this up. Going back to the majority floor leader's discussion, my parents' training and discipline in gun safety couldn't have been better. I'm certain of it.
Majority floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, the bill as written requires the mentor to have a small game license. If someone wants to bring an amendment to not make that a requirement, that's fine. But I think it works the way it is. Again, you know, one of the big things in Fish and Game, or that department that controls rabbits in Wyoming, mentioned and confirmed that hunter numbers in Wyoming are going down rather dramatically. And again, I think this is one of the reasons, is they don't experience that until, you know, the ones that are still interested at 13 or 14, you know, there's just a lot more interest at 8 and 9 than there is at 13 and 14. You know, kids have sports activities. Again, they're in junior high, you know, some of them going into high school. It's a different paradigm then instead of when you're in fourth or fifth grade. So, again, it's a simple bill. I think in the future it'll increase hunter numbers in Wyoming. And, again, letting that parent be able to bond with their son or daughter out in the field rabbit hunting, that to me it was a good thing. And I think that most of you who grew up that way think it's a good thing, too. So please vote aye.
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 235 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 235 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for our consideration is House Bill 253. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 253, introduced by Representative Harshman, Economic Development Account Funding, an act relating to economic development. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 253, Economic Development Account Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux. Noes, Representatives Clausen and Gray. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Greer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reported, do so. The recommendation that House Bill 253 do pass. And I will go ahead and address the standing committee amendment. So I'll move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, or excuse me, it's actually Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 253. The first part of the amendment is simply a correction of a typo. And so I'll just draw your attention, get the microphone adjusted here, right, to page 1, and we're looking at, get down here on line 11, is we had the Legislative Reserve Stabilization Account, and we just had to get the wording on that correct. So that's a cleanup amendment. The second part of the amendment's a little more significant, and I want to just take a moment to talk about that. You know, this is our large project funding program that we brought revitalized, I want to say, 2 years ago. And they are for large projects, and projects over $5 million. And the sponsor of the bill was trying to emphasize the importance within the state of Wyoming of the telecommunications or our fiber network and to get to that last mile component. And he was wanting to, stimulate that. Within the committee, we thought it maybe got us a little detracted from really the meat of what we want to do in this bill. It's not that any of us feel that that isn't important and is not something that we should continue to pursue as a legislature. But with the fact of it being large projects over $5 million and a little bit of the wording, the committee decided to clean it up, and we just deleted that section, and it's really Section 2 on the bill as you look at it. And so with that, I'll take any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess I want to, I don't know that I'm going to not support this amendment, but I want to speak on this issue. I think it's absolutely essential for economic development in rural Wyoming that we get to the last mile of broadband, that we have good broadband distributed all the way around Wyoming where we can bring in individuals who can work remotely from their home or residence and function in our economy and be a part of our communities. If we're going to revitalize Wyoming, We absolutely need to have this last mile. And so while I understand the technicality of that, I guess what I would ask the good chair of minerals is, in lieu of that, you know, is this still within the prerogative of this bill to consider this, or was this just, I guess, what are our options here? Because I think this is absolutely essential that we try to, as a state, try to find a way to get, make sure, and there's multiple ways of doing it to get this good broadband scattered around Wyoming without affecting competition, but basically attracting competition. So a little bit of thought, Chairman Greer, or the good chair of minerals, on where we need to go with this then.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very good points, very good questions. You know, we don't have a good program to finish this up. You know, the state engaged in their unified network and has done a wonderful job, but you also have to keep in mind that we had to also balance that with the public companies within the state. And, you know, we have done, and I think it's under our chief executive for the state, he gets some credit for this, quite a bit of credit, quite frankly, is we've done a good job reaching out and getting the state covered and getting us set up to be able to move forward with our technology. One of the things that we simply need to look at is, as you said, that last mile, getting that. I can speak to my business. We have fiber ran right down through. We granted the easement right to the back of the office, but it's not hooked up yet. You know, so I feel that frustration just a little bit. But this particular bill really doesn't address that. It wasn't the right place to have it, in my opinion. To tell you that there's an answer to finish that up, I can't pull out the green books and show you one right now. I can tell you, as a chair of the House Minerals, Business, and Economic Development Committee, it's high on my priority list. And I've got a great committee, and we're going to work on it this interim. Trust me.
Any other discussion on this amendment? Chairman Northrop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, am concerned about tying the hands of the state and trying to get the last mile. And it's a big concern in our area. There's a number of us that just, we don't have hardly anything. We live in that shadowed area. There's nothing there. You can hardly even get a cell phone out. So, once again, I'm like the representative from Pinedale. We're just in that area that we'd like to see the last mile finished up.
Chairman Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I do too.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, you have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number one is passed. We're back on the bill. Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the explanation of the bill, I'm going to turn it over to our learned speaker.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I should have the chairman of minerals talk to my wife, perhaps, on that last adjective. Anything but learned. But thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to bring House Bill 253 to the body today. And members, I think we've talked about a lot of issues, and I think in these final days of dealing with our House position and our House issues, before we cross this over, this economic development piece is going to be a big deal. And I guess back in the summer and fall, and we always hear about diversity, and then we hear why not diversity, and because those folks don't bring a tax base or whatever, all those arguments, and it really wasn't. I talked to a person, said, you know, why are we investing all this money outside of Wyoming? You know, we've lost $200 million, not in realized losses. They're unrealized. We haven't taken them in our fixed portfolio. Most of that's invested overseas. So it's not even invested in New York or Denver. And so we've got all these constitutional mechanisms that our founders put in the Constitution for us to really take our own money and invest in Wyoming. And so there's a couple mechanisms. The one I bring to you today is really this whole economic development fund. This will take a two-thirds vote on third reading. And I have a handout. It's in your box. Really pulls the Constitution in this Article 16. And you can see the original Article 16, 6, and then how it was amended in 1986, Article 16, Section 12. And it's called sometimes the Amendment 4 process for folks who are new to the body. And it's called Amendment 4, frankly, because it was the Fourth Amendment on the ballot in 1986. Folks, I can remember back to that. But so it passed by the voters, and it allows us then to set aside money on a two-thirds vote of each house. And the process then, just to talk about the process, this will first go to the governor's office for vetting, and then it goes to the treasurer, and it goes through the SLIB board, to the business council. All these have to meet the prudent investor rule, and then comes back to the SLIB board for final approval. There's been a lot of publicity what's happened in the northeast part of the state, where Buffalo Bill used to hang out. And so we have a private company now that has applied for these loans. And these are about 3%, 3.5% loans right now. That's what the return will be to the Permanent Mill and Trust Fund. Okay? And this isn't the program of the old legislative designated investments, where we had a few that were actually losers. Now, we've closed those out over time and recouped all that. But you'll hear... But it's not that program, and that's been changed and modified, and that's in a whole separate part of the Constitution. That goes back to the 1974 writing of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, and we'll talk about that hopefully tomorrow or the next day. But how do we take our Wyoming money and invest it in Wyoming? And I think it's going to be really crucial for us to kind of have this serious discussion and talk about it. So what this bill does, Mr. Chairman and members, is activate some more money into the Amendment 4 process. And so it proposes on line 11 to take from the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, you can see the Standing Committee fixed that swap of words, $25 million to be placed in this fund. And then when you flip over to page 2, that this will not be a standard budget request. This will be something that we bring to the legislature. And then Section 2 was deleted in the Standing Committee Amendment. I'd like to just talk about what's currently happening with the $25 million that we appropriated in 2014. So there's really three projects that have applied for this and queued up. One of them is in the northeast part of the state. And here's the public-private investment. And this public investment is about a little over a 3% loan that will be paid back. And the public investment up in that northeast part of the state is going to proposed $13.5 million. And the private investment is going to be $124.4 million for a total of $137.9 million and 156 jobs. Now, these are jobs where people are walking around in white coats and they get married and have kids. I mean, these are good jobs. And so that's on the ground right now. And the company announced this massive expansion of it to this proposal in that community last week, last Thursday. And you people from that part of the state are aware of it. The other, there's two others that are out there, have applied for this part of this loan. And one of them is in Campbell County. And these are value-added facility that will take our state's coal. And they're asking for a $15 million loan out of this program at that 3% interest rate, a little over 3%, and then with $11 million of their own for a $26 million investment and three dozen jobs completed there. And they're already announcing plans for an expansion after that. And then finally, another value-added program here, I think it's in this city or in this county, and $15 million of this Economic Development Fund loan combined with $61 million of private investment for a $76 million project. There's more of these, and I've mentioned to several of you in passing, there are more of these projects out there, frankly, in every area of the state. There's a value-added agribusiness kind of in the basin area up in the northwest that would like to come here and add value. And so these are, you know, you're not going to loan a company all of our money, but it's a way to leverage, and it's a way that we can attract. And it's something, frankly, good news when our chief executive and our folks are talking to these major corporations. And I would just tell you again, I think the thing that I've learned in my years in the legislature, and particularly the last few years, chairing committee number two and then this current job that you've elected me to, I'm frankly amazed at the conversations that are happening with our chief executive. I had no idea that the companies that he's talking to and the people, and it's very competitive. And not that even this is a make-or-break thing, but it's part of what our intent is as a state, that we are the number one business-friendly state in the country. And we are, you know, we've got ideas that we want to help, and these are constitutional ideas that our people have passed in the Constitution. So I would, I guess as I say this, and I think what I've heard, like I heard a little bit, I didn't hear it in committee, but I've heard, well, you're picking winners and losers. State's picking winners and losers. Well, I think you need to read more on the Amendment 4 process. This is a rigorous process. It's probably almost too slow. It's slower than commercial lending, but it's a process that is well vetted. You know, we put hundreds of millions of dollars into water projects in the last 12 years during our boom time. Those are general funds, basically, that we've diverted through water, through flow mechanisms, through private developments into our subdivisions and cities. And there's private developers that use that to help them install water for our communities. I don't know, are we picking winners and losers with our water fund? And I think so. I just think, to me, I think that is a non-argument. This is a rigorous application process, and I think that you talk to any of the development folks around the state who are doing this work to try to grow our economy. I think it's huge. And so we have these big dreams of a value-added industrial campus in this state, maybe several of them. Maybe it's an agribusiness in the basin, and maybe it's technology in the southeast corner, and maybe it's added value to CO2 that comes out of the ground and make a super steel carbonite where we use all the CO2. And maybe it's down here in Sweetwater where you have all the natural stuff from water and rail and interstate and natural gas to add value. And some of that's going on, and how do we get this to happen here in Wyoming? It's not going to happen in 1 year, 2 year, or any of our terms in the legislature, but it's these steps we got to start taking to dream the big dream. It didn't happen in Alberta, in that province north of here, overnight. It's taken decades to build. It's the biggest in the world. States down on the Gulf Coast have similar things, but it's this work and this vision of people that sit in these chairs. And so, you know, it'll take a two-thirds vote. You'll probably receive, you know, a lot of email, I hope, from folks on both sides of the issue. But I think as you study this issue, how do we want to invest Wyoming's money? Do we want to invest it in Malaysian mortgages? Or do we want to invest it in companies that are going to move here to provide jobs for our people? And so, boy, I really stand for any questions, and I would really ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the bringer of this bill bringing it forward and having a good discussion on this, because I believe it is necessary. We do have funds that we can utilize, and utilizing those funds to invest in our state is a great idea. I do have a couple concerns with this bill that I would just like to raise real quick. We do mention that we are looking at taking $25 million out of our funds. And in Section 2, we do say that we're going to appropriate $5 million of those for telecommunications broadband services. And I do appreciate that we're spelling out that we're utilizing that $5 million for a specific task. I would just like to see a little bit more delineation on how that rest of that $20 million is going to be utilized and exactly what funds or what services those are going to provide. And so I would just ask for a little more clarity. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker and Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The members in the standing committee amendment that you adopted, that the good majority whip and the chair of committee number four gently pushed back on, remove section two. So that little segregation for broadband in the state is removed from the bill. So it's not in the bill right now as amended. And so it's this $25 million now for this large project fund. And so, you know, I don't know the answer to the good representative from the capital city. I don't know those projects. I don't know that any of us know, because we're not into some of these conversations unless you have that. But I think there are folks interested continually that want to come to Wyoming and expand and develop and do that. So I don't know. I've heard of proposals out there, folks that are interested really in all corners of the state. But and I'm looking at those right now, and most of them are advanced energy projects, value added ag, and advanced manufacturing. And again, this isn't going to pay all the thing, but it's that little bit that might encourage folks. So to answer the good representative from the capital city, I don't know any projects. I don't know.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rise in respectful opposition. Respect for the bringers of the bill, but some concerns here. One is the LSRA draw from our key savings account. This is a $25 million draw. We're drawing into savings when we have structural insolvencies. I think that's really problematic. Especially when we very well might end up with a trigger on that savings account where taxes might be triggered. Don't know where that's going to end up, but that's something to consider if we're going to draw $25 million into the LSRA. The other big concern, I think, with this is the side effects to business. We always talk about what's created by these loans, but there's a lot of side effects to those not getting them that they're lost there. And I think we need to always consider economically, what are we doing with the incentives of an action like this? I think it changes the incentives in our government, where the focus becomes more about petitioning government for a loan rather than providing a really good product and getting a line of credit from a bank. And I think a lot of this approach is a product of banking regulations that were put on in the last decade. And I think with our new executive branch, I think that we may get some relief here. And I think it will be easier to obtain credit. And I think that this approach maybe is we don't need to use it as much anymore. So with that, I think it's the wrong approach for a $25 million draw from a savings account. Thank you very much.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a similar attitude about this. I didn't know that we had such copious amounts of money in the LSRA that we could loan it out to people at 3% interest. I do know that we got banks, because I live downtown here, and I see banks every day that I drive by, and I've heard that they got a lot of money in them. So there's no reason why we have to get in the banking business with our rainy day funds, of all things. And I guess I'd like to ask the bringer of this amendment another question, and that is whether you think that we can afford this diversified development without a diversified tax system. We got this 70-30 ratio here, okay? And we're talking about beefing up the 30. Well, the 30, the diversified side of it, never has worked here in this state when the mineral industry wasn't booming. Because why? because we rely on the mineral industry to pay the bills of this diversified company because they can't pull their freight. It's real easy to figure out what the reality of this is. You get some business like this that hires 10 people. Statistically, it shows that those 10 people will have each of them will have 4/10 of a student in school. And I'm just talking about schools here, all right? So you take these 10 people and they buy a house in town and live in it, and on average, just a little under $1,000 goes out of their tax bill, goes to schools, okay? But those 10 people have caused, this development has caused four students to be added to the school system at $15,000 a copy. So you take 15,000 times four, you get 60,000. What I say about the households that they pay $1,000 a piece, so there's $10,000 defrayed out of the $60,000, and that leaves $50,000 for someone else to cover. There's been no problem when we had the mineral industry picking up that bill. But then people say, oh, well, you got to go to the company. They're the ones that pay the taxes. And I think we went through this the other day, that our industrial tax rates are the lowest in the United States. It's less than 1% of the fair market value. And that can't possibly cover the other 50,000. And remember, I haven't even talked about police and fire and all the city things. Now, if you need more evidence of this, go to the cities or the counties that have been most successful in diversification. Those that have been most successful in diversification are the biggest drain on our distribution system of funds to local governments. The more diversified they are, the broker they are. So my question is, can we have this diversified development if we don't have a diversified tax system? I think most banks would like to make loans like this. They probably can't make a loan for 3%, but they may not need a loan for 3%. If whenever anybody shops for loans, they're going to go where the interest rate is the lowest. And we can beat any bank out when it comes to interest rates, because we can just set it wherever we want. It doesn't make any difference if our opportunity cost of these funds is 5 or 10%. We're talking about coughing up the difference and just saying, well, we think it's nice to be able to find these funds for these businesses that can easily find funding in the private market. So I could go on and on, but I suppose my 5 minutes is about up. So,
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just remind the good chairman of revenue, he can talk as long as he wants on general file and on committee of the whole. And so there's no limit on the time of debate. So if you'd like me to answer some of that, Mr. Chairman, I would just talk about the investment of the LSRA. It made under 0% last year. Made under 0%. And so along with the rest of the state pool, and I think, you know, you present a good question, but I think you're debating another issue. The good chairman, I think, it brings up the real key to this. You know, to have a diversified economy, it's going to take some courage. It's going to take some work, but also to have that diversified tax base that he talks about. Most of us in Wyoming are freeloaders. Well, that's a fact. I mean, it is. And could minerals fund the state in perpetuity? Sure. You absolutely bet it could. We are blessed with so many mineral resources, but a lot of that's out of our control. It's the weather controls some of it. International Markets controls some of it, and the owner of 67% of the minerals controls a lot of it. And so what's our choices? So our choice then is say, no, we don't want you, and we won't even talk about a diversified tax base, and we don't want you because you're a drain, and let's just keep on going down. We can be a couple hundred thousand people, and we can be the Buffalo Commons. And that's the real goal. I mean, that's been talked about since the 1950s. And I'm going to push back on that. And I think we got to start talking about, really, what's the big dream here? What's the plan? What are we going to do with Wyoming's money? We have billions of dollars at the Constitution. The folks who voted for it and the folks who brought these amendments anticipated that someday when we couldn't rely on mineral wealth, we would use for economic development of the state. Go back and read the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund in your Constitution. Read the last sentence that created the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. It's what they talk about. That was their idea in 1974. So as far as competing with banks, all these have to pass a prudent investor rule. We can't just set the rate wherever we want. There's another program where we can loan from the 1974 amendment to municipality, the political subdivisions of the state. We can make 0% interest for water development, and we have done that. And, you know, we've been just giving that general fund money away the last 12 years, and I think the good chairman of Minerals talked about, we're going to study all this in the interim. Maybe we can't give away all our water projects now, and maybe we're going to have to loan them out and do those things. But that's a discussion on another issue for another day. And so these do pass the prudent investor rule. The diversified tax base is about the bills that come out of that committee, and I think it's a fair argument. And then finally, to the good representative from my hometown of Casper. You know, I think he makes all these points why we sit there and kind of, you know, what are the side effects of this and the regulations that have impacted our state. I agree with a lot of that. But I will say this, too. We're not the only state that's talking about diversifying their economy, that's trying to recruit these people that are leaving these high-regulation states. There's a reason Texas... There's a reason 30,000 people are moving to Austin every month. And they're coming with these high-tech corporations, and they're coming from other states. And you know where they're coming from, to escape the burden of regulation and taxes. And we can be in that game, and we've been close on a lot of big ones. And we have some challenges with the size of our workforce and the location and all that, but I think we got to start selling this place. It's a beautiful place. It's a great place to live, to raise families. That's what we got to talk about. So we're going to get what we talk about. And we're going to get what we emphasize. So we're going to get the Buffalo Commons with total reliance, 70-30 on minerals, if that's what we emphasize and if that's what we settle for. So, and whether, you know, hey, the state of Wyoming will be here 100 years from now, we have faith in that. But I want us to continue to work to try to build this and keep going. And so I appreciate the debate and look forward to more. And there is no limit on committee of the whole debate, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Flitner.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And thanks to the good speaker for all of his comments and history lessons. And last night in our committee meeting, we were scolded for not doing more to diversify this economy so that we didn't continue to find ourselves in the position that we're in with regard to this shortfall in education. And I think the beauty of this is that it speaks directly to that, provides for that term, that key term that everybody's thrown out called economic diversity, that thing that so many of us spoke to when we ran for election. The beauty of this, it's a low-interest loan, but it is just that. It's a loan. And it also is investing in Wyoming, and it has the opportunity for each and every one of you to provide something to those communities that you are here representing. There are already several projects teed up that will benefit several of our representatives that are in this body right now. Without these low-interest loans, they may not happen. I just think that we have to do everything that we possibly can to promote growth and opportunity in our state. And I so respect what the good chairman spoke to with regard to taxation and what that the drain on, you know, our economy, our local economies. You're so knowledgeable, and I respect everything that you're saying, and I hope that we do have that conversation that you mentioned, because I think it's important. But I also think this is important. And again, these are loans. These are companies that are fully vetted. They will go through the SLIB board and then ultimately through the state treasurer's office. I think it's a good thing, and I think we need to do everything we possibly can to grow our communities, our economies, and diversify this economy and make Wyoming a great state that people want to move to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I voted for this constitutional amendment in 1986, and I'm going to vote for this bill, too. And I encourage your favorable consideration. And here's why. The folks that came before us had the courage and the vision and the discipline to set in place what we now, today, are counting on very heavily, our rainy day fund and other things. And as the good speaker indicated, you know, we compete. In my day job, I talk to business owners every day, not so much lately, of course, but every day I talk to them about what would be possible for them in our community. And referenced earlier about the project going on in East County. And when you think about it, we have things going on in our state that are unique to the planet. Just a couple miles west of here, we have one of the largest computers on Earth. We have a cloud system going in place because of our electricity and other many wonderful things. And I guess, you know, banks, you know, you can talk about banks, but banks have limits. You know, they have an algorithm, they have a formula, they have regulations, the limitations. But when other businesses around the world, around the country, consider where they can do business in a most cost-effective manner, I think we should want them to look at our state and to come and consider our state. And I, you know, we're business friendly, but we could be friendlier. And this is a loan, has been mentioned, but we have some exciting things rolling out here. Technology, I believe, is the key to unlock our economic potential. And so just as the folks before us in the 80s had the foresight to set up this process in our Constitution, here's our opportunity to set it up for the next generation coming after us. And so I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Representative Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm against this bill. I believe that we have opportunities to grow our state. One of those would be if our rainy day account's losing money, why don't we quit giving that to all those people overseas to play with and bring it home and put it in our own banks that they could invest it in our own economy? Another way to do that is for the state of Wyoming to go after the federal lands and the minerals, which would create the biggest boom this state had ever had. If we had those lands back and the minerals, we'd put all kinds of loggers back to work and sawmills and mining people, drilling people, and I don't know how much money that would make. Just thinking about it gets me excited about the opportunities that would be waiting if we had our own lands back. You think about the opportunities that we could have for building our own economy in this state, but I believe it needs to stay in the private sector where it belongs, not in our government. They tried that over in Italy during World War II. On and against the bill. Thank you.
Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I stand on in support of this bill. I really believe that, you know, and I kind of talked about the broadband issue and how we need to get economic development around the state, and we really do need to get economic development around the state. We can stick our head in the sand and wait for something to bite us on the you-know-what, or we can be proactive. And this money that's being loaned out isn't going to be competition for banks. This is seed money for the rest of the loans that will go along with these big projects. This is simply seed money to get more businesses here in the state of Wyoming. And I couldn't agree more with the good chair of revenue that we absolutely do need to upgrade our whole tax structure to recognize these other developments that we have in the state of Wyoming that are not just mineral based. We need all of it. We need investment on our federal lands in mineral projects. We need investments like this in a private sector, you know, on private lands to get this work done and to diversify our economy and to make our state strong. And this is just a tiny step to do that. I encourage your support of this bill.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm definitely for this bill. It's been said that bring and invest the money and make some interest. Definitely this is not a grant system. This is repaid with interest. The good speaker mentioned that account, the account we're talking about, was at a 0% growth or below. And so I would say, rather than invest in a foreign country or on Wall Street, we start investing more money back into the state. And I'll go one step further. Years ago, to Governor Friedenthal, I had the conversation, I would like the state to invest in transmission lines and refineries and power plants. He had a few choice words for me. But I just feel so strongly in investing our funds, and especially the Permanent Mineral Trust funds, back into our state versus in the stock market. But we're not talking about those funds, but I am definitely on the bill, and you can have reasons to be suspicious of the Business Council and their actions, but in this case, please be supportive, and I trust Minerals will, in their study, in the next go-around, have more valuable information, and we'll work through the problems with Business Council.
Representative Clausen.
The intertwine of government and economics has been a global question since the beginning of time. How much interference should the government have in the economic structure of their country? And we see huge swings from the socialism, communism, capitalism. What makes our system of economics great? What is the magic ticket to our system, the United States? It's been successful over the years, and that is having the proper motivations. And in our system, if you don't pay back your lender, they hold your feet to the fire and they take what you have left of the money they borrowed. I just want to make certain that we are creating a system that provides motivation as of the reason that we've gotten to the place we've been. Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what do we do with our LSRA? That's the question here. And I'm probably going to support this bill because I think it's probably going to make a little more interest than where it's sitting right now. But we can also invest in Wyoming's people. And I may get off in the weeds here a little bit, but that's all right. You have four-wheel drive. We're going to take 25 large, and we're going to invest that. But last year, we could have taken a little bit more out of the LSRA, and we could have invested it in our tax refunds for the elderly and disabled. But we took $3.8 million away from that. Or we could have invested in people who maybe have problems insulating their homes, low-income energy assistance. We took $7.4 million away from that program instead of taking some out of the LSRA. So that's what sticks in my craw. We hurt the people in this body sometimes who can least afford getting hurt. And we help the people the most who don't really need that much help. Like the good chairman of revenue said, there's banks. He thinks there's full of money. Maybe we're competing against the banks here. I don't know. I'll decide how I'm going to vote on this a little later on. But we can also invest in the people in Wyoming, especially the people who need the help. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need to get, first of all, I need to get one thing clarified from the bringer of the bill sometime during his discussion on this. But I heard him say, and I was taking notes fast, that Wyoming is already, or is the most business-friendly state in the union. And I've heard that. It's happened, it's just been, this has gone on for 6, 7, 8 years that we've been the most business-friendly. But I wanted to make sure that this wasn't said within the context that this House Bill 253 will make us the most business-friendly. So if I'm right on the first, my first version of this is right, are we just competing against ourselves to make us even more business-friendly than the most business-friendly state in the union already? The other thing that I forgot to mention is that did the committee or is anybody, is the sponsors, have any evidence that loanable funds in this state is in short supply? I don't know how other banks are in other parts of the state, but my banks up there, they have so many loanable funds that they don't even know. If you go down there with a CD on some nonprofit or something, they don't even want your money because they got so much of it. Now, I want to direct your all the members' attention to a study that we did in management audit a couple of years ago. And that's what convinced me about having such a sour attitude about these things. And the study dealt with the study of legislative-directed investments, okay? And this isn't the first deal. This isn't the first pot of money that we're peeling out of the Treasury and giving to people or lending to people. But the primary purpose of this study was to find out what the opportunity cost was of all these legislative ideas. And I didn't bring that study up. I had no idea we were going to be talking about finding ways to give away money out of the LSRA, but it's in the millions and millions of dollars in foregone interest that we have passed up over the decades that simply shouldn't have to happen. All that's going to happen here is we're going to take money that we're investing in the highest and best use somewhere, and we're going to put it in these low interest, high risk loans, and see if we can make somebody happy. But I want everybody to look that up on the website and take a look at that study. It's really pretty shocking to learn what you pay for having the attitude of let's keep this money at home and use it ourselves and keep it away from the capital markets. I oppose this, and I respectfully ask all the rest of you to oppose it as well.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill, members of the 64th, this is just another one of the many arrows that we're going to have in our quiver. It's going to be another one of those tools we'll be able to use to help drive economic development. Frankly, we need to get off the oil, gas, and coal. Okay. So... these loans are very well vetted. There's a huge process that they use to go through. I've experienced it. I've been helped with it the first time this bill came around, and I'll bring that procedure so that you can all look at it in the next discussion we have. So on and for the bill.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really do appreciate all the comments of our chair of revenue. But I do want to address some of the concerns that he's raised. One is I have been working through that audit that you spoke of. And quite frankly, it's some of Management Council's best work. It really is. And he's absolutely right. We've had program after program after program come in, good ideas that have come out of this body long before us. And I sort of see that they get pushed off to the side. One of my goals is to work through that audit, bring out those programs that work. And one thing in particular is cut down on the overhead. And we say the cost of what it is to get these programs out. But that's work for another day for me. A couple of things I do want to address. You know, this issue on the diverse tax structure is a different argument for a different day, but it's relevant to our discussion today. And the fact of the matter is that we're not going to be able to make that switch, or this is the way I see it. We have to go along a continuum here to where we keep bringing in more diversified businesses. We diversify our overall economy. We bring in more people to work in these areas, and then we'll be more able to transition away from our current tax structure to something that'll work. It's nothing that happens overnight, but this is a step in the right direction. And so this summer, as I'm watching all of the races, I mean, it was a very very political summer, and I read all the letters to the editors around the state and a lot of things from all the people who were running. And it was all of a sudden everybody had this great idea. Hey, we need to diversify the economy. Economic development is what we need to be doing. But wasn't particularly a new idea. It's an idea that's been around for a while and some people working with it. This bill here that's being proposed is a way to take that step forward. I, too, am not particularly comfortable with the fact we're using the LSRA for it. However, right now, as we look at it, that is the only pot of money that is available. And we need to keep moving forward. And I say that when our economy is down here at this point, that's when it's time to be building the infrastructure. That's the time to be getting ready for the next upswing, the next uptick. Now's the time we really have to be thinking about it. So that's why I went ahead and signed on this bill to bring this forward at this point in time. I do want to talk just a little bit concerning our banks. And so one of the requirements under this program is that the loans are in excess of $5 million. Well, if any of you put any projects together, you'll find that the lending limit on our banks in Wyoming is under $5 million. And so if you're going to go to a larger project, you end up going to a bank. And a project I did here about a year and a half ago is $60 million. A bank is owned by a very large country on the other side of the world. That was the option to go to on that. So don't think you're hurting your local banks with this. The other thing, and this may sound very cynical, but it's the truth. We are trying to get, we're not picking winners and losers with this. We are encouraging winners to pick us. We want these companies, in today's environment, these companies are going around state to state and looking for the best opportunity to locate themselves. And all this is doing is that's that incentive. We're just putting some lipstick on so that they'll pick us, so they'll maybe want to, you know, take a dance with us. That's what we're trying to do, okay? So I just wanted to touch base on some of those things. I understand the concerns. We've got a lot of work to do over the next 5-10 years in this realm. But the bringer of the bill brought this to keep us moving in the right direction. I'd encourage your support.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hear a couple terms today. Diversify the economy, and that we need to take care of our own. Well, the term, I've been using that term in my first election when I first ran for this office. That's how long it's been around. Evidently, it's become popular now. A little late to the show, you know, we in this body have not realized that we use another term, and it says, we are the most business-friendly state in the country. That's great. But I don't see anybody kicking down the doors to come here and open up business, so something must be wrong. And we have to do gut check around this room and see if we are the problem, because I think that problem is inside this room. We need to fix that problem. This is one way to get there, by taking and using some of our money in a proper and prudent way that's been vetted. It's not a giveaway. It is a loan program, and it's as sound as we can get with a proper use of our money. On and for the bill.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm for economic diversification. I'm all for it. But my economics background, one of the things that has really informed that my economics background has informed me on is that you have to have the right setup in order to have economic diversification. And a high tax, high spending culture is not the way that you create economic diversification. I approached the economist that addressed us a couple weeks ago at that dinner about this issue and asked him his views on this issue, and he said he cited the state with a panhandle just to the north of the state on our Gulf Coast and the state with the sea directly south of us. And he said that the way they diversified, because they had energy-based economies as well, the way they diversified was by letting the economic life cycle play out and by originally having low regulatory, low tax structures, although that has changed, at least in one of those states. That is playing out here in our state. That's one of the reasons why, although we had this decline, it did not affect our economy quite as much as past declines. The problem is, with our lower population, it takes a lot longer for the economic life cycle to play out. And we have to let it play out. The way that it won't is if we begin to raise taxes and if we increase the size and scope of government. And that's the side effect of doing this here. We have a structural deficit that we have to address. We have this savings account that is there to help us address it. And we want to draw $25 million into another account that really isn't helping us to address that insolvency. The one other point is that there's been a lot of talk about the return on this account, and it's a savings account, not an investment account. So it's there for us to address a structural insolvency, which is, you know, one of the things we're trying to do now. So I ask you to let the life cycle play out. I mean, one of the reasons why I think the chairman of revenue and I are talking about this, we have common economics backgrounds, and empirically in economics, this has been shown not to work. And we have to let the economic life cycle work. It happened in it worked in the state south of us. It worked in the state north of the state with a T that has a nice panhandle on it. And if we interfere that process, I'm afraid the side effect of it is that in the long run, we're probably hurting our economic diversification. That's my view. I appreciate the speaker encouraging debate on this. Thank you.
Representative Furphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, okay, we've heard a lot, but I want to give you a real-life example of how our state has helped our community over the hill. If you looked at our community 15 years ago, we were just a university community. So whenever the university went down, our entire community went down. Fortunately, with the state's help, we've been able to change that. We've been able to diversify our economy. We've attracted some really nice companies to our community. And how did we do that? We had help from the state. 15 years ago, we were trying, as bankers and everyone else, to attract business to our community. We couldn't do it. We tried hard. But with the state's help, we were able to attract some really nice companies. The world's largest safety company is now located in our technology park. We've attracted an international defense company that's going to get up to 500 jobs. We've attracted a manufacturer of sights for the end of shotguns and rifles who is expanding and growing rapidly. We've kept an agritech company. So now you look at our community. 15 years ago, our downtown had a lot of vacant buildings. Right now, our downtown is vibrant. We got more businesses than we can find spaces for. We're building homes. Things are happening in our community. And once again, it's because the state helped us. The state invested in our community. So I'm really big on continuing this growth in our state, and I hope other communities can take advantage of this and diversify also. So I'm big on having this happen. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 253 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 253 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are on to the next bill. Is House Bill 215. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 215, introduced by Representative Blackburn, Drug-Induced Infant Endangerment, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 215, Drug-Induced Infant Endangerment, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Beitman, Jennings, Olson, Pannell, Salazar, and Winters. Noes, Representatives Baker, Kirkbride, and Pelkey. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
At this time, the chair is going to take a privilege of the floor to give us a little break, and maybe we can all stand up. But I'd like to introduce my wife that came down to visit. So, thanks. Denise. Welcome to watching us.
That's right.
All right. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 215 do pass. For the explanation, I turn it over to our good colleague from House District 42.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, members of the House, I bring this bill to you. It basically is a bill about infant homicide, infant abuse by pregnant women that are on meth, coke, and heroin. Currently, if a child is born under the influence of meth, it's not considered child abuse. DFS is not required to act. The hospital is not required to report. Law enforcement is not informed in most cases, and where they're almost powerless to act. And we have a case close to our hearts in this around this area. If this legislation would have been in effect, the Silas Ojeda was born, he most likely would be alive today. Because it wasn't law enforcement or the DA, we're never notified that there were methamphetamines being used in the home, and no intervention took place to move the child from danger. This young man was 13 months old, and the sheriff's office had been looking for him in landfills. I don't believe they've still found him. Also, we have a case of a particular individual here in Laramie County that has twice in the past year intentionally consumed methamphetamines during the beginning of the third trimester. I believe that I got that from law enforcement, and the child had been born alive but died some hours after. I think I'm very sure we have the full support of the sheriffs and the police in the state of Wyoming for this bill. along with, we have a lot of support from violence advocacy groups. So I'd like to go through the bill now for you and touch some of the parts of the bill. On page 2, line 7 is the first spot that we had a big change. And it talks about the person is guilty of drug-induced infant homicide if, and below it talks about the things that happens. If she knows or reasonably should know that she's pregnant, intentionally administers any of these drugs, she's guilty. We had a discussion in the committee about RXs, how we would handle that with doctors. The 6-2-108 directly reflects the 35-7-1039 that talks about the exceptions for RXs with doctors. Below that, page 18 through 21 talks about the person who gives birth to the infant who is at the time alive. On the next page, page 3, line 2 through 6, it talks about if the infant dies after the live birth, the same thing, injection, inhalation, etc. Line 8, if the drug-induced infant homicide, it talks about the penalty here, that it is a felony punishable by 10 years. Again, 6-2-503 reflects the Schedule 1-2 narcotics drugs. Line 15 talks about induced infant abuse. And then our next big change is line 12. Talks about drug-induced infant abuse is also a felony. It's punishable by 5 years. And a lot of this language is repetitive. Page 3 to page 5, we put that language in there, engaging in the course of conduct, and it talks about the live birth. On page 6, what we're doing there is putting some law into effect for the dealers and or the providers of that drug if they know she was pregnant. And it would be $50,000 and 20 years in jail, minimum, and not more than 50 years. Page 7 speaks to how many weeks that she's pregnant should they know, and it looks like 22 weeks they should definitely know. But until then, it might be questionable. So I'll stand for questions.
Representative Pelkey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'm somewhat loath to get up and speak up against a bill that is designed with these goals in mind. They're laudable. I just think that it's taken the wrong approach. I was asked to be a co-sponsor of this bill, and I was actually quite interested when it started because I've, in fact, encountered a number of these as I take court appointments in my community. Most recently had a case where a mother was indeed tested for methamphetamine. The child tested positive for methamphetamine. The state intervened not with a criminal action but with a civil juvenile action, an abuse and neglect petition, and that child is in the custody of foster parents. We tried desperately to get the mother help and had some success, but at this point, the child is still in foster care. Abuse of drugs in this state is a serious problem. What I'm worried about is criminalizing the act to the point where people are afraid while pregnant to even seek necessary prenatal care. If we criminalize a disease, and substance abuse is certainly qualified to be categorized as a disease, we may provide a disincentive which has far more serious ramifications than not passing this bill. The bill doesn't state the rules or the grounds of evidence that are needed to conduct an invasive drug test. On newborns, pregnant women could be less likely to seek prenatal care because of that. She could also be more likely to terminate the pregnancy in order to avoid prosecution and imprisonment. Woman could be charged with felony drug-induced homicide or felony drug-induced infant abuse because she should reasonably know that she was pregnant. I'm not an OBGYN, and I'm certainly not a woman, but I have seen cases where people who should reasonably know didn't know that they were pregnant. Again, it's an odd standard to set up in a criminal matter. It establishes a harsh sentence for someone who probably needs help more than imprisonment. And I think we're taking the wrong approach to a serious problem. As an olive branch, I've already spoken with the sponsor of the bill. I think our goals are similar. I think our desire is to make sure that children are not poisoned by drugs in their earliest times or in vitro. But what I'm hoping for is that we take a far more compassionate and effective approach to solving this problem rather than simply throwing people in jail and criminalizing mothers, separating families, and not addressing the underlying substance abuse issue. So I would urge you to vote against this bill, even though its motives are decent and good.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too looked at this bill earlier, and just a couple of things I want to point out, and maybe some comments for the sponsor. But the first component of this is a homicide charge, and when I read through this, I really don't have any difficulty with that, except for I draw your attention on page 3, line 5, where we have this term. Contributing factor, and I'd like to see something a little more stringent in there as a primary factor rather than just contributing. That seems to be a little low of a standard to convict somebody of a homicide charge, even if it is only carrying a 10-year penalty. The second crime that we have in here is the drug-induced is the abuse component of it, the 5-year charge. And I guess I do really like on page 4, subsection F, where we provide an affirmative defense, which is a strong incentive to seek treatment and recovery. So that part of the bill I like. The one part I really don't like on this I wanted to get to is for the person, the enhanced penalty for distributing. And the reason I don't like it is we have a rebuttable presumption, and that's based upon the number of weeks of somebody, of how pregnant they are. And, I think we've all got experience in this area. Some people show their pregnancy more than others. Baggy clothes that are worn can hide that. When I'm standing in line at the grocery store buying my vegetables, you look at the magazines and there's people that say, yeah, I gave birth to triplets. I didn't even know I was pregnant. There's those things that go into that. That rebuttable presumption component of it does give me a lot of concern. I think if we got to the some of this cleaned up, maybe that last crime wiped out, I really do like on the 5-year component, the middle ground, the incentive to seek treatment, good stuff. I like that. And I don't like the contributing factor language on the homicide provision. So there might be some room to work with it a little bit.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, I would look at any friendly amendments to keep this bill alive, and I partially agree with the last speaker. And being the wise country lawyer that he is, I'm sure he can help me craft an amendment or craft it himself to move this bill forward. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the intent of this legislation. I've talked at length with the bringer of the bill about this legislation, and I'll just bring up some of the issues that I have with it. On page 6, lines 7 through 10, you can see the beginning of mandatory minimums. Currently in the state of Wyoming, we don't employ that very often, this mandatory minimum aspect, and thankfully not. Now, why not? Well, mandatory minimums have been proven to not work at all, ever. It's, you know, since mandatory minimum sentencing began, America's prison population has exploded, quadrupled, in fact. America now jails a higher percentage of citizens than any other country in the world, which costs $80 billion a year, and this is just going to compound on that. Essentially, mandatory minimums do not achieve the desired effect of deterring individuals from ever breaking the law in the first place and have not moved the needle on drug abuse enough to even measure accurately. So we've got that aspect of the mandatory minimums, which I think could be handled with an amendment. However, other aspects. When we're measuring for methamphetamine at a hospital, the standard drug test for methamphetamine, you can have false positives with. In fact, the only place that we can go for a guaranteed test is into the state south of us. Nowhere in this bill does that take into that an account. So that's kind of an issue. If we've got a drug test where you can have false positives, then that's that issue. Other one the good country lawyer alluded to is the fact that, and speaking with medical professionals about this, a lot of people don't even know that they're pregnant. So where in this legislation does it presume how that individual should reasonably know? Who gets to decide that they should reasonably know? So that is an aspect of this legislation. I want to work on this, but I don't think this is a legislation. It just needs too much. So unfortunately, on and against this legislation.
Representative Biteman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill. In committee, we heard some very disturbing testimony from the coroner and another law enforcement official regarding a case where a woman admitted to law enforcement that she intentionally took copious amounts of methamphetamine to kill her unborn child, and with no remorse, just looked her straight in the eye and told her this. And the prosecutor couldn't prosecute this individual because there wasn't a law on the books. That's why we need this bill. This needs to get passed. I don't care what we got to do to clean it up. Let's clean it up and get this bill passed. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think there are some inherent issues inside this bill that we can work out, that none of which are big enough to kill this bill. This bill addresses an epidemic. We have an epidemic in this state. In Laramie County, there were 40-plus babies born to methamphetamine in the last year alone. It's a problem. I'm not sure that this bill, in its current form, is its best, but no bill that comes through this House is its best. The mandatory minimums, I think that that's an easy Second Amendment or even Third Amendment solution. In fact, I asked the good representative from the county that is number one in our hearts to bring that amendment, and he said that he would, and I encourage him to do that. In fact, I think that eliminating the mandatory minimums is actually in line with the criminal justice reforms that you're going to see tomorrow. So I don't think that, that's a reason to stop the progression of this bill, work with it. If there's a distributor issue, I think another representative raised that issue as well. I think that's workable as well because the bill is not intended to capture the distributor. It is intended to capture the user. That is the epidemic. The babies that are born to methamphetamine are the concern, and I think to address those through the distributor is, we're probably going to capture some of them in that as well, but that's not the main goal here. You know, prenatal care has been raised as well, and I want to point two things out. First, there is absolutely no empirical evidence, and this committee heard not one drop of empirical evidence from a doctor that gave us any indication or hesitation that prenatal care would suffer. Two things that you should be aware of. In statute, I am not aware of, and we consulted with several OBGYNs who also could not point anywhere in Wyoming state law that would penalize or rather require a doctor to report in these instances. So I think, one, know that your doctor is not required to report, and so I think in terms of giving the care that they need, they're probably going to get it if they're seeking it. Number two is there's actually an exemption built into this bill for the individual seeking the care. So if they go in to seek care, we have built in an immunity exemption for them. And so it's my understanding that they're not going to be prosecuted for seeking that care. So the concept that this would in itself as a law prevent mothers from seeking care who are subject to heroin or methamphetamine is a false narrative. They have the immunity built in, both from the doctor's protection and inside the bill for prosecution itself. So focus on the goals of the bill. If you want to address them on amendment, I think the sponsor would welcome those. And those that have those issues, bring them forward and let's fix the bill. Let's produce the best product we can, but let's address the epidemic. We can't afford another study or set this back for another interim time to address the bill. Let's move it forward.
Representative Loan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, I would just like to say that it does have a lot of merit, and this bill does bring forward an issue that hasn't been previously addressed that needs to be addressed. I say let's push this bill forward and work it where we need to. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a woman that's really close to me that works in a school up in the land of the camels, and she sees a lot of problems with children that during the pregnancy are affected by those that have taken too many drugs. The people that take the drugs are more interested in themselves, or they wouldn't be doing that. They neglect to think about the problem that they're going to have for the child for the rest of their life. And this bill that I signed on to, I know there's a problem and it needs to be corrected. And I hope you will vote in favor of this bill to let it go on and we can make the adjustments, amendments that we need to make this a good bill. On and for the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to try my best not to be too mean here, but there's not a standing committee amendment on this bill. And, I mean, every third line there's an issue. As I'm going through it page by page, and I've now heard four people from the good committee number one who heard the bill. I'm a little flabbergasted. If somebody could talk to me about maybe some amendments you discussed or if some went down in committee, because I see issues all over this thing. And it's 295 draft, so it must have been asked for this summer. And so we've had, sometimes in the process, you know, if it was requested in the last 3 weeks, you can kind of see how we speed through these things. But this thing's got to be around for 6 months or so at this point. I just want some testimony from the committee about maybe some issues specifically you talked about that you couldn't get agreement on, especially page 6, when we talk about any person who may give a controlled substance and it terminated a pregnancy in whole or in part. I don't know how you in part terminate a pregnancy. But maybe I guess I'd just like more discussion from members of the committee on why no standing committee amendment. And I've heard now from 6 people that we could amend this and work on it a little bit more. But my question is, why haven't we amended it and worked on it in the process until it got to committee of the whole?
Representative Pelkey.
I would defer to the good animal doctor from the land of the camels. He hasn't had an opportunity to speak yet.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just have a couple of questions about for the bringers of the bill. The first one would be page 2, and it's again repeated later, talks about any amount of methamphetamine or controlled substance class schedule 1 or 2. So my question is, why just 1 and 2? There are certainly addictive drugs in class 3 and even 4, and I think arguably in 5, but obviously I know what class one is, that's experimental only. I know what class two is, that's has a level of addictiveness that's a concern. One thing I will point out is any amount of controlled substance, marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance. So so let's be clear, I think the way this is currently drafted, that someone with any amount of THC in their system, that is that the circumstances arise to this, that would be of a concern. Contributing factor, I do think there needs to be a standard set there. I know that was talked about, and I won't go any further on that. Probably the thing that I want to ask for some clarification on, it certainly doesn't have to be in the context of this discussion, it can be on a second or third reading, is the number 40. The number 40 was provided to us as a number of folks apparently in a particular community where this was an issue with. And I don't know if it was an issue because there was a an abuse or a death of this of an infant, but I want to know, you know, what occurred with those 40? What is the disposition of those 40? Where are those children? Where is that? And finally, I would just say that having spent nearly 30 years married to a lady who deals with kids that have special needs, alcohol isn't listed on this either. And so you think a little bit about the and it's a legal substance, by the way, folks. So when we're trying to get to something, I appreciate that. I appreciate that we want to protect the life of the unborn. I appreciate we want to protect the health of the infant. But let's take, and maybe this is the first step, but let's be cognizant of the bigger picture, and where a lot more of probably concern is not with the drugs maybe on this list, maybe the headline cases, but I think if you talk to some of the educators in our communities, a lot of it is with the stuff that you can pick up at the local corner store. So just keep that in mind as you consider this bill. Worthy cause, some more questions to be answered, but let's keep it in context of some of the other challenges we have in our communities. Thank you.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, and to the last speaker, just inject this that, yes, marijuana is a Schedule I drug. We're talking about a Schedule I narcotic. They're different.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to elaborate a little more on the discussion in the committee, I think that this bill conceptually is a good idea, and I think that most of us in this body support the idea as a whole that we don't want mothers to be using this substance while they're pregnant. But again, and I've said this before on other bills, this is reactionary. This doesn't do anything to prevent this. Again, above and beyond all the other problems associated with this bill, it's reactionary in nature. We tried to, there were a number of us in the committee that tried to get to a point where we could support this bill and maybe offer some amendments, but really we didn't have a whole lot of time to work the bill to the point where we felt comfortable with this, because there are a lot of issues, as has been pointed out. There are a lot of concerns from a number of different people with a lot of this language. So I'm still against the bill.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We did ask that same question that's on page number 2, line 14, regarding controlled substance. I just wanted to point that out. The statute there in 357-1039 actually defines narcotic drug completely separate from marijuana specifically in that statute. And so it is very specifically exempted from this bill. And so I just wanted to make that abundantly clear, so that you wouldn't confuse those two issues. Narcotic drug is very specifically mentioned.
Representative Pelkey.
Thank you. Just speaking again in opposition of the bill, you know, it's been pointed out by several folks that several of the speakers here, including the bringer of the bill, have suggested that we amend it. You know, you can't be driving an Edsel on your way to Le Mans
and expect to amend it into a Ferrari by the time you get there. I think this is an interim topic. I think this is a bill with laudable goals, and it's going to take more than amendments. It's going to take us taking a serious look at HIPAA requirements, what barriers exist for those doctors and healthcare providers who could be in a position to report that, and how we create a responsibility report. As written right now, a doctor's failure to report could result in the suspension of his license, even though, again, that's a largely subjective question, whether or not he had a reason to believe or reason to understand that there was methamphetamine involved. I think the penalties in this bill are draconian, both for the defendants and for healthcare providers, and I feel really uncomfortable moving forward with this bill, but I would encourage one of our good committees here to examine this topic as an interim topic and see if we can do it without bringing a sledgehammer to the fight and bringing a little bit more compassion and treatment.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, to the last speaker, I got a note here from my DA last night. We were talking about his email. We were talking about doctors and their responsibilities. And he said here that his conclusion, he tried to get a hold of the doctor, and he checked with his wife and scoured statutes for statutory penalties specific to doctors who failed to report suspected child abuse. He couldn't find any such penalty in statutes. So I don't know if I answered all the questions. This law was put together, this bill was put together with all the legal stuff in there by my local district attorney, who I have a lot of faith in, with the help of LSO. So if there's no other questions, stand for the question.
All right. Oh, Chairman Barlow.
Mr. Chairman, I want to touch on this mandatory reporting issue because, you know, in the context of even my profession, I have an obligation to report suspected abuse toward children, not toward animals, toward children. So I think there is something throughout all healthcare licensed professions. Now, maybe it's a code of ethic issue. Maybe it's not a statutory thing. But I certainly have been practicing for 25 years, and that is one of the key tenets that I have had. Obviously, take care of the animal, but I have an obligation to the to that component of the owner's population. So this mandatory reporting thing, it may not be found, but I think that there's an implication either through our oaths, whether it's a Hippocratic oath or through other things, that there is an obligation. So, but I'll follow up on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Blackburn.
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 215 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to 10.5B, the bill, having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. More than 14. All righty. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen. No. Baker. No. Barlow. No. Bightman. Aye. Blackburn. Aye. Blake. No. Bovey. No. Brown. No. Burkhart. No. Bird. No. Clausen. Aye. Clem. No. Connolly. No. Court. No. Crank. No. Dayton. No. Edwards. Aye. Eklund. No. Ayer. Aye. Flitner. No. Freeman. No. Furphy. No. Grew. No. Gray. Aye. Greer. No. Haley. No. Hallinan. No. Halverson. Aye. Henderson. No. Hunt. No. Jennings. Aye. Kinner. No. Kirkbride. No. Larson Lloyd. No. Larson Dan. No. Lindholm. No. Lone. Aye. Laux. No. McGuire. McGuire. Madden. No. McKim. Aye. Miller. No. Nicholas. No. Northrup. No. Obermuller. No. Olson. Aye. Paxton. No. Pelkey. No. Pipirinen. No. Ponell. No. Salazar. Aye. Schwartz. No. Summers. No. Steinmetz. No. Sweeney. No. Walters. No. Wilson. No. Winters. Aye. Zwanitzer. No. Mr. Speaker. No. McGuire. Excused. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Obermuller. Aye to no. I mean no to aye. Thank you. Other changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 14 aye, 45 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rules 10-5B, House Bill 215, having failed the roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
January 31st, 2017. Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 140, amended. Following a roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Joint Resolution 8, recommended do pass. House Bill 235, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 253, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 215, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Signed, Representative Larson, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Congratulations, Representative Larson. We're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
House Bill 197, introduced by Representative Olson. Marijuana and THC Products Policy Reform Act, an act relating to controlled substances. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 197, Marijuana and THC Products Policy Reform Act, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Bightman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Pownell, Salazar, Winters. Noes, Representative Baker. Signed, Representative Winters, Vice Chairman. House Bill 60, introduced by Capital Financing, State Investment Policy, an act relating to public funds. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 60, State Investment Policy, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Burkhardt, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 94, Judiciary, Criminal Justice Reform, an act relating to criminal justice. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 94, Criminal Justice Reform, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Burkhardt, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 225, introduced by Representative Harshman, Select Committee on Education Funding, an act relating to education. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 225, Select Committee on Education Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhardt, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 262, introduced by Representative Harshman. Penitentiary Savings Fund, an act relating to the Wyoming State Penitentiary. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 262, Penitentiary Savings Fund, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhardt, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 89, introduced by Representative Pelkey, Judges of First Class Cities, Retention Elections, an act relating to municipal judges of first class cities. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 89, Judges of the First Class Cities Retention Elections, respectfully reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Zwanitzer. Noes, Representative Edwards, Ayer, and Sweeney. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. House Bill 106, introduced by Representative Blackburn. Change in Party Affiliation, an act relating to elections. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 106, Change in Party Affiliation, respectfully reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lone, Sweeney. Noes, Representatives Byrd, Lindholm, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. House Bill 183, introduced by Representative Burkhardt, Security for On-Deposit Public Funds, an act relating to public funds. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 183, Security for On-Deposit Public Funds, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney. Noes, Representative Byrd, excused, Representative Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Lindholm, Vice Chairman. House Bill 221, introduced by Representative Burkhart, Non-Resident Employer Bonding Requirements, an act relating to labor and employment. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 221, Non-Resident Employer Bonding Requirements, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Lindholm, Vice Chairman. House Bill 227, introduced by Representative Summers, Automatic Renewal of Consumer Contracts, an act relating to consumer protection. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 227, Automatic Renewal of Consumer Contracts, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. House Bill 241, introduced by Representative Barlow, Background Checks, Interstate Compacts, an act relating to criminal history records. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 241, Background Checks, Interstate Compacts, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Noes, Representatives Edwards and Lone. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. House Bill 248, introduced by Representative Zwanitzer, Select Committee on Elections, an act relating to elections. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 248, Select Committee on Elections, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Noes, Representatives Edwards and Lone. Signed, Representative Lindholm, Vice Chairman.
Messages from the Senate.
Messages from the Wyoming Senate, January 31st, 2017. Message number 190. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 46, appeals by county assessor. Ayes 28, noes 2. Message number 191. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 96, real estate brokers and salespersons. Ayes 21, noes 1. Message number 192. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 97, tobacco settlement data sharing. Ayes 30. Message number 193. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 17, municipal jurisdiction. Ayes 14, noes 16. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Do we have any privileges of the floor? Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hey, if I could have your attention for just a second. You all know how important your electronic devices are to you. They become kind of an extension of your brain. I somehow have misplaced my iPad within the last hour, and I have one of those little apps that allow me to locate it. And I've used the thing, and it says it's offline. I know it has a full charge. But, hey, if someone sees an iPad with a black cover on it, could you chase it down and bring it to me? Thank you, guys. Really need that thing.
Representative Kinner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fellow members, just a reminder, in the morning,
We will have our Bible study once again at 6:30 in L51. We have a great breakfast planned and would like more of you to consider joining us in the morning. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sweeney, privilege.
Privilege to the floor, Mr.
Please
Speaker.
Please proceed.
I would like in the fishbowl to welcome one of our county commissioners from the center part of the state, Natrona County, and currently serving as the president of the Wyoming County Commissioners Association, Rob Henry.
Welcome to the House, Commissioner. It's always nice to have someone from Natrona County. You know, that one with number one on our license plates and number one in your heart. That never gets old, Member. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general file, the first five bills tomorrow, House Bill 231, House Bill 174, House Bill 238, House Bill 195, House Bill 94. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February 1st, 2017.
Committee announcements. Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a revised schedule for travel recreation, your committee number 6, for tomorrow morning at 8. We will hear House Bill 270, 278, and 09. Thank you.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your JAC House Committee will meet on adjournment to hear House Bill 79, the continuation of House Bill 173 and House Bill 217. And tomorrow at 8 o'clock, we will have House Bill 291, 289, 288, 286, 267, 251.
No, I'm not up. I'm not.
Chairman Northrop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet tonight upon adjournment in House 54. We're going to finish up 236. And as we also have for on Wednesday, we're going to do House Bill 41, 150, 228, 225, 277, 283, and 292, and that'll clean her up. Thank you.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Transportation meets in a few minutes, and we're going to start with 202 vehicle, motor vehicle insurance, 275 driver's license revisions, and 185 safety restraints.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. In Jonah Room H37, we'll hear House Bill 254, Public Purpose Investments, House Bill 208, Attorney General Elected Office, House Bill 216, Sexual Assault Custody Rights, House Bill 271, Game Bird Farm Greater Sage Grouse, and House Bill 233, State or School Employment Contract Compensation Reduction. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now that we know the full capacity and stamina of Committee Number 10, I'd like to announce our agenda for Wednesday, February 1st. We have the following bills. House Bill 258, Department of Family Service Contractors, 268, Access to Naloxone, 181, Government Contracts, Labor Organizations, 265, Plant-Derived Pain Medication, if time permits, 207, Restrictions on Public Benefits, if time permits. And now it's 4.5-hour committee meeting, sir. I think we can do it in under 4.5. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Barlow. And I just, as we wrap up tonight, there were a couple committees, committee number 4 and committee number 10. It was after 9 o'clock when they wrapped up last night. And so really appreciate the work. And I left here about 9:30. There were still members padding around the halls here and finishing up committee work. So appreciate the work for the citizens of Wyoming. So with that, I don't see any other announcements. I think that clears the desk. You've heard the majority floor leader's motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, say no. The House is adjourned until Wednesday, February 1st at 9:30 a.m.